Disrupt Nation. My name is Anthony Delgado, and today we have a special guest. Carmela Chambers is the CEO and founder of Thriving Launch. Carmela, thank you so much for being on the show.
So happy to be here with you.
So, you know, we were talking behind the scenes, and you were telling me how right now you are in the island of San Juan in Washington, and I'm coming to you live from the island of Puerto Rico in San Juan, Puerto Rico. So I think we're island friends now for life.
We definitely are. We got that connection.
So you know, before we go into what you're doing with your business now, let's talk about like the beginning. Like, what was your introduction to entrepreneurship? And you know, we're big proponents that like entrepreneurship isn't really taught in school, and even when it is, it's not taught properly. So what was your introduction to entrepreneurship 14 plus years ago?
Well, my introduction really came from my desire for freedom, and that stemmed from when I was a teenager. I hitchhiked across the United States, I hitchhiked across Canada and around Europe. And so I did that all before I was 17 years old, and I really knew that I had to have freedom. It was such a huge part of my spirit. And so I started off as a Jill of all trades, and it just morphed from one business to the next, depending on my desires and my passions and as my skills grew.
I love that. I love that. And what was, I was talking to a colleague of mine about this, like most entrepreneurs will give up in the first year. So you've had your business for 14 years now, congratulations, going on 15, congratulations. What are some times when maybe you wanted to quit, or you came up against some adversity and you weren't sure about the future? Because entrepreneurship is definitely like a rocky road, right?
Oh my God. Yeah, it is rocky. And I mean, I could say right now, I feel solid with where I'm at and my business. I haven't had this same business for 14 years, but I've been in business for myself for 14 years, probably more now, but I've felt like I can't do this. I'm alone. Nobody around me can relate to what I'm doing. It's just me plugging away behind a computer, not making money for years on end. You know, I've had the first 2 years I decided to go online, I didn't make any money, and I was working nonstop. And it wasn't the freedom that I thought would immediately come. And so I've definitely been at rock bottom. And I think that's the beautiful thing about entrepreneurship, is that you get to decide and choose every day if this is what you want to keep doing. Is this really your purpose? Is this really your life focus? And even as my company has grown and grown, it's still a choice, you know, and I still get knocked down.
Definitely, definitely. Yeah, and I think that's why it's important to focus on what you're creating and not only money, right? I mean, if you were in it just for money, right, you can get a 9-to-5 job. So really focusing on what you're creating in the universe, and then figuring out, you know, how do we monetize this? How do we turn this into a business? Rather than, I think a lot of entrepreneurs get into it, quote unquote, for the wrong reasons. And you know, financial freedom is definitely the right reason, but then they're like, okay, well, I'll sell knives. And it's like, you might not want to sell, when selling knives sucks, like the second year of selling knives, you might not want to keep doing it, right?
if I was in this for money, I wouldn't be doing it. Money has never been the driving force for me. It's the undercurrent of the big desire that I think is what really drives entrepreneurs forward. And for me, that undercurrent of the big desire is freedom. And that's what keeps me moving forward, is that desire to live by my own terms, day by day, and to help other people do the same thing.
That's awesome. I love that. So let's talk a little bit about your podcast now. Has the business always had a podcast, or at what point were you introduced to the world of podcasts?
Yeah, I didn't want to have a podcast. I was so, so against it. I had put a year into my YouTube channel and like was still stuck at like 12 views. I tried blogging. I tried article writing. I tried social media. I tried all these different things. And when I met my now husband, he had a podcast and he had this incredible ability to just connect with the highest level people, whoever he wanted to talk to. He could get them on the phone and talk to them for an hour on a show. And, you know, he was really the driving force behind me starting a podcast. And we ended up, after he wore me down, and we ended up launching a podcast together. And it was one of the best decisions for our business because it gave us this whole new platform to not only connect with these high level influencers, but also get our message out there like it had never been out there before.
That's amazing. And so what year did you start the podcast?
Oh man, it must have been around 3 years ago, maybe a little more than 3 years ago. When we started our first, actually launched two podcasts. And yeah.
So if you had some advice for yourself, like when you were getting started and you could talk to your 3-year-old self, what advice would you give yourself?
Get help. Don't try to do it alone. That was really a huge thing for me, is once I started building our team, that's when it was another up level, you know, and I just thought, how could anyone else do this? And once I started hiring people, I realized it took 5, sometimes 7 people to do what I was doing and to replace me. It was just, what was I thinking?
Definitely. Well, how can entrepreneurs do that when, you know, maybe they're first starting out and they have limited resources? What are like some hacks to get some help when you're on a smaller budget?
Yeah, the smaller budget thing is, I definitely relate to that. And I'm kind of, I don't want to call myself a cheapskate, but I really feel like a business needs to cut costs wherever possible. Yes, I'm frugal. Like it's very important to trim the fat. Like you could just stack up $10 a month software here and $300 a month payment here, you know, and it's so easy to stack up those costs as a business. And so some of the best ways to start off is to find people who have the skill set that you need, and you can share your skills with them and find ways to do Skillshare exchange. You know, that's the free option. You'll find that it can take a lot of time and energy up front to find those people and to keep those relationships nurtured. And then the next thing would be doing outsourcing, you know, finding people that you can outsource your work to.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, we've had some success with different gig economy things. One of the things that we've been using lately, which it is one of those $300 a month costs, but we found it to be pretty cool. Design Pickle. So they're not a sponsor yet. I mean, I probably should get a sponsorship for plugging them, but Design Pickle is pretty cool. You pay like $2.99 or something a month, and then it's like an unlimited amount of requests that you can kind of put in there for like graphic design and stuff like that. So depending on how much of that stuff you're doing, it kind of works out. Definitely cheaper than an employee, right? You couldn't have a full-time employee for $300 a month.
Yeah. Well, depending on where you're outsourcing to. But yeah, you could, there's a tip, is you put that, everyone head over to Anthony's website and check out Design Pickle. He's got an affiliate link there for you.
Boom. It'll be there by the time this podcast, time this airs, there's going to be an affiliate link.
Check out the show notes. God damn it.
So that brings up another great point, is like monetization. So, you know, how do you personally monetize your podcast, and how do you recommend that that new podcasters bring in some money? Because, you know, I said this, we released like a little mini course called Power of the Podcast. And I say it like podcasting is fun, but if you're not paying the bills, it's gonna get kind of hard out here. So how do you recommend that we monetize?
And that's the big thing, is that it ends up being an expensive hobby for people. And that's really a shame. Most people just end up paying out and not really seeing any return. That was like the most basic example, you know, that you just share things that help you in your business and you put it in your show notes and you have affiliate links and, you know, there's just easy money. You know, that's a really simple example. I personally don't run sponsors on our show. It's just because we have our own offers, we have our own products, and we utilize that commercial spot for ourselves and our own products. So that's one way. And another big part of it is just by putting out quality content and creating relationships, like strong relationships with our guests. And, you know, they share their stuff, our stuff with their audience, because we make it really easy for them to share. And that brings in a whole flood of new people into our pipeline. You know, those are just some of the top ways that make it so your podcast, it doesn't even matter if you have a tiny little show, if you can leverage it in a way where you're putting out quality content and utilizing your own commercial spots. You know, and sponsors are another obvious way, but that can get a little more complicated.
No, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, I think, you know, affiliates is definitely one thing, and sponsorships. But if you can create, you know, your own offering where you can sell something a little bit more high ticket, I kind of think that's where the bread and butter is, right?
Yeah. And sometimes it takes, you know, we kind of can nurture people through a cycle of maybe they'll come in for a low offer and then offer them something a little more and then something a little more. And, you know, it makes it easier to swallow those higher end sales, because they say I don't know if this is the exact quote, but if someone's willing to spend $1, they're willing to spend $100 in your business.
Yeah, for sure. So I see you guys have the podcast publicity course, and then that's $9. So you're getting people in at a low price point where they're buying an ebook and they're showing that they're invested in you. And then once they invest something small, then they're more likely to invest in something larger, right?
Yeah. And some people, they just want the ebook, but some people want more support. They want a video course that goes with it, or they want to get publicity outside of podcasting and they want to get into major publications. And we offer that as a bonus or as a, you know, an upsell, because it naturally merges with that.
Definitely. Yeah, no, I love that. It's so important to, you know, create, I guess they call it a funnel, right? But create systems that help your business grow and scale and, you know, offers that complement each other, right? Like you said, like everybody, you know, some people might just want, you know, the ebook, but other people are going to want a more hands-on approach. And it's great that you're able to do that. And, you know, take your experience, what you've learned from being in the industry to do that. So let's talk a little bit about your marriage. I mean, you guys look like you have an amazing relationship. When did you know that he was the one?
Pretty early on. He was actually still working. He was like working 80 hours a week. He was like a senior director of a nonprofit, and he was just burnt out. And he had this podcast, he had like all these other skills and a desire to have an online business. And I just, like, I think 3 months into our relationship, I convinced him to quit his job and come travel the world with me. So 3 months in, we bought a one-way ticket to Thailand, traveled for 4 months in Asia. We traveled for 7 months total. And like, you know, that's like that's a good way to know if you're going to be into someone for a long term. Like, you get to go through the real shit when you're traveling like that together. So, yeah,
it's a hell of, that's a hell of a second date, right? It's like, hey, let's travel the world together.
That poor sucker, man. He had no help after he quit his job, you know. It just
you brought him into your world.
I did.
That's amazing. And what were, you know, in traveling with your partner and you know, really pushing the limits of a relationship, right? I mean, there's some people who get married and maybe don't travel with their partner and work so closely together the way you guys do. What advice do you have for, you know, other couples that might want to emulate what you guys have created, and what kind of struggles have you guys had, and how have you learned from them?
Oh, so many struggles. One of the big thing that I think is really, really important is to find each other's gifts and value those. You know, the gifts, if like ideally your partner's gifts are going to be different than yours. I lucked out so big because Luis's gifts are completely opposite of mine. And that also created tension and struggle because we have a hard time understanding what the other person, where the other person's coming from, and understanding the work style. But the more that we can honor each other's gifts, because I have this, I'm focused, I'm like attention to detail, I'm systems, operations, like how do we get from point A to point Z, and what are every single step in between? And he's like big picture, inspiration based, networking, going out there and communicating and making connections with people and making these big things and dreams happen. So the more that we could just really value each other and our gifts, the better off we are. I mean, I could talk more about the struggles if you want, but
yeah, I mean, sure. I mean, you could talk about the struggles. Absolutely. I mean, I'm sure there's people out there that could relate.
It is like to be in the same space and to be working on things day in and day out, you know, it's some of the hard things are just being able to like trust the other person's process. I've definitely felt like, are you even working? You know, like, are you even doing anything? You know, I've had a real hard time with that. And he's also had a hard time with how focused and like, I can get so, hey, these steps need to be done, so focused on the details that it's hard for him to swallow those, and it's hard for him to scale back what he's doing to like kind of sink down to the detail level. That's been some friction that we've really had to work through, and I feel like we're in a really good place with that.
Definitely, definitely. And when did you guys, when did he quit his job? After how long did he, after 4 months he quit his job? Like that was it?
Let's see. He was probably quit within like 2 or 3 months into us dating. And then we were on a plane pretty soon after that. So sometime within like 4 months we were on a plane.
Wow, that's amazing. And now what places have you been, and maybe what's one of your favorite places out of all the places you've been?
Oh, we went all over like Bali, Thailand, Laos. I mean, all those places are so beautiful. We went to the Philippines. We went to some other countries I'm not even thinking about. We've been to, we go to Colombia every year. That's the last few years we've gotten connected to he was adopted from Colombia. We've been reunited with his biological family down there. So we have
this
beautiful, huge, loving Latin family in Medellin, Colombia. So we actually, this in 2018 in August, we flew 34 of our closest friends and family down, and we got married down in Colombia, and it was incredible to see his biological family and his adopted family meeting for the first time, and then my family in there. It was so beautiful.
Wow, that sounds super magical. Congratulations.
Thanks.
So if you could give some advice to the 18-year-old version of you, and you had like 3 minutes to do that, what would you tell them?
You know, I want to take some advice first from my 18-year-old self, and that, like, I was so connected to magic, and I want to tell this version of myself to remember that magic, find that magic every day, because life can be so magical. Not to get all like too woo woo or
anything. No, I love it.
But that
to you're me, the first like, person to flip the question. I love that.
I don't need to tell you why, but it's just that magic is so important. And then I think I feel like I was in a good place when I was 18, and I would just say, keep going, you know, keep following the path that you're on, and trust that when you're down and when you're kicked down, it's going to work out. Like, everything always works out for the better.
Definitely. I love that. What advice or what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see newer podcasters running into?
They have this idea. Now, we run a Facebook group of podcasters. We work with a lot of new podcasters. So I know new podcasters. And one of the big things is they have an idea that they're just going to put out a topic that they kind of like talking about, and then it just costs them a bunch of money, and they don't actually make an impact, and people don't listen because it's just, oh, I'm going to sit down with my friend and we're going to have this conversation and everyone's going to love it because I love talking with my friend. It doesn't really tend to work out that way. Or I see people, they really want it to work out for their business, and so they try to copy someone, and they just copy someone else's show style to the T, and that doesn't work out because it's just a cookie cutter, you know. So one thing I really encourage people to do is find a topic that actually is related to your business and that's going to feed your business, and focus on that topic for a podcast. I know that sounds like a no-brainer, but a lot of people miss that step.
You mean like feed it financially or feed it with viewers or what?
What I mean is, if you have a business on health and wellness, don't do a podcast on movie reviews, you know, like do a podcast on something that's, that is on the topic that you make money on.
Definitely. Absolutely. And how can new podcasters get their audience numbers up and get their show seen by more people?
I think a big part is building those relationships with your guests, helping your guests to feel special, helping them to make it really easy to share your show, your episodes. So if you put together graphics, or you put together show notes, or you have a player, whatever it is, make it easy for the guests to put that information out to their audience. Because you're essentially borrowing audiences from your guests. And another great way to build up your audience numbers that you may not think about is who listens to podcasts. People who listen to podcasts listen to podcasts. So be a guest on other shows. That's a great way to borrow listeners, get listeners to come over and listen to your show.
Very cool. So we're running a little bit low on time, but I want to touch on one thing before we wrap up. March is I think it's like Women's History Month, something along that line. And we hosted some events. We host events here in Puerto Rico. So we just hosted a mastermind event. And we did a women's panel and a lot of different, there's definitely a lot of struggles in the female entrepreneurship community. It kind of feels like a boy's game, a bro-y game. What advice would you give to female entrepreneurs? And are there any experiences or things that you might want to share about your unique experience as a female entrepreneur?
The advice I'd give is to not try to take a bro approach. As a female entrepreneur, we have something different to bring to the table, and something that naturally women have is more collaborative energy. And that's not putting down men at all. It just, there's just this more community focus. And I just say, use that skill to not try to be the Wonder Woman that's out there trying to do everything, because I already know that you are capable of doing it all. I've been that way. I felt like I could do everything in my business. But the more that you draw in your team, your community, your supporters around you, the further you're going to go. And I've definitely been around a lot of it, where I've had guests not act like I'm not even in the interview when Luis and I are interviewing them, and they just talk to Luis the whole time. I've had people look right past me, walk right past me to talk to Luis. I've paid a lot of money to spend a month at an event with all men, and had women, all the guys at the event, almost all of them, like, talk bad about women, degrade women. You know, and it's like this normal culture and environment, and it can really knock you down. And I just have to remember that I've got to be around the people that recognize my gifts, amplify my gifts, and that I could do the same for them.
Well, absolutely. I don't know what event that was, but I would love to have you come to one of our events, because that energy is definitely not there.
Sounds good.
what advice would you give maybe like a younger female, like an 18-year-old female that is thinking about entrepreneurship, but maybe feeling like it's not for them? I mean, I think there are natural, I mean, you mentioned it earlier, right? Like, there are natural differences between men and women. I forget what the statistic, there's some science behind what I'm about to say, I promise. But basically, like, something along the lines of, like, guys are more comfortable just doing things without knowing what they're doing. Right? Like, guys are more comfortable just like trying things, and like, if they don't know what they're doing, they'll show, I think this was what the statistics, they'll show more confidence even if that confidence is not based in reality of actual experience.
Even if, right? They shouldn't have it.
Yeah, it's just like we have like dumb confidence, like blind confidence to go towards things that we may or may not have experience. So what do you think younger females, if it's like their first time jumping into something new, as far as leadership, maybe leading teams that are comprised of men, right? Like, what advice would you give to them?
Yeah, a big part of it for me is you, if you don't have that confidence, that's going to be the most important thing. If you want to be heard, you have to know that you have value. So it's such an internal game. It's such an internal job to start with, because it's so easy for you to be overlooked. And the more that you hone in on your passion and your skill sets, the more confidence you're going to have. and the more likely that people are going to listen and want to follow you as a leader.
Awesome. I love that. I love that. All right, cool. I have one last question, and it is, what does disrupt? So here's something interesting. The word disrupt actually does not have a direct translation in Spanish. The translation directly is interrupt, but that's not the same thing. And I think in the culture, especially in like the startup culture, disrupt has a very unique name, a unique connotation. So what is disrupt when you hear that word? What does it mean to you?
To me, disrupt is, it can manifest in being willing to step outside of what you think is going to be the right way to do something or the answer, and being willing to disrupt your internal process to see things new. I mean, as entrepreneurs, that's what we have to constantly do. We have to constantly disrupt our thought processes, our patterns, our cycles, in order to break the mold and keep expanding further. So it's a brilliant word. So hands, hat off to you, because it's a brilliant word when it comes to entrepreneurship.
Thank you so much. So if people want to connect with you on social media and online, where are the best places to do that?
Yeah, you can find me at Kamala Chambers. Also, we have, you can connect with our podcast or anything else at thrivinglaunch.com.
Kamala, thank you so much for being on the show. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you. God, it's so great to be here with you.